This is Barry Martin Snyder, and our website is luminousself.com. In the previous recording above, we talked about the most essential information, and that is what you might want to consider in preparing for the likelihood that coronavirus will be something that we'll be dealing with in the U.S. In fact, we already are. But I thought in this video I'd go into a little bit of the backstory and try to summarize what I felt was some of the important information that might be of interest and also very helpful to you. Now, Karen Anderson and I became aware of this sometime towards the end of January. It's curious, we both got a very strong sort of intuitive hit that something was going on. And really, we've never paid much attention when other of these things like Ebola and swine flu and SARS crossed the horizon and just never really felt much about it. But this one instantly galvanized our attention. And as we began to research it and go deeper into it, we kept getting that strong intuitive hit and thread that we were really being taken on a journey that was really important. And that continues to this day. We felt it was important to do these two audios because of the many hours that we have spent researching this have given us a lot of perspective that we thought might be helpful to all of you who probably weren't called to do that. So it was in essence hoping that you would benefit from all the information and insights we've gleaned. And of course, no, there just are insights and our sense of things and the information we've gathered. You know, present these as the absolute facts or truth, and certainly our intuitive hits about it are just that. You know, it's just grist for the mill for you to find out what's true for you and find your way. We're not making any concrete assertions or recommendations in any way. Neither one of us are healthcare practitioners. We don't have any idea what you should do. But we do want to give you this because we feel it's about sharing and networking, especially at this time on the planet when things are changing so rapidly. So how it began? Well, the story is that it began in a fish market in Wuhan in China. And that somehow this virus was related to animal products, and that started the whole process. Since then, there's been ample evidence that that's probably not the case. In fact, it seems more than likely that the virus itself was released from a level 4, which is the highest level, by a weapons lab that also happens to be in Wuhan, not far from that fish market. How or why it got released, no one knows. Early on, there was an investigation by some scientists into the structure of this virus that revealed that there were three inserts that were from HIV or AIDS. Clearly, this was not a naturally occurring phenomena. And that particular article, which appeared on Zero Hedge, was immediately criticized and was withdrawn. Subsequent to that time, there's more information coming out that shows that there is an HIV mutation in this virus. I'd like to mention that the links to everything that I'm going to say here is below this recording, so that enables you to dive into it on your own and find out more about it. My first intuitive hit when I saw this was that it was that there was something to this, and that the HIV inserts were going to be critical to how this virus acted. And it seems that's the case. As you'll find out later, this virus binds to cells about 1,000 times more effectively than SARS did. So there's things here that do not match the normal behavior of viruses. From the very beginning, there began to be questions about the data that the Chinese government was releasing. Information about what was really occurring on the streets of China indicated more and more cities going on full lockdown. Nobody coming in, nobody going out. People quarantined to their homes. Cities like Wuhan, with tens of millions of people, empty, no one in the streets. We were also picking up leaked information that came out on some other minor news sources inside and outside of China, things that were coming through on Twitter, etc., that said that things were much more drastic there, that the government was instituting draconian levels of control over this thing, that led us to really have a pretty deep feeling that there was more going on that meets the eye. Those intuitions were grounded when we started to follow peakprosperity.com. When we started to follow peakprosperity.com, particularly Chris Martinson, who's one of the two principals. Chris is, in our opinion, the number one futurist we found. And he's also a PhD in toxicology from Duke University, which is one of the better medical schools in the country. And Chris had zeroed in on this right away because he was aware of the discrepancies in what the Chinese were reporting and what was happening on the ground. And as he began to dig into that, he realized that China was not really telling us the truth. They were drastically hiding what was going on there, which they have pretty much control over the media there. Recent report, Chris all along, by the way, was saying that the numbers were probably at least 10 times greater than China was saying and remain to this day. A recent study that came out on Zero Hedge said that the numbers, based upon studying various things on the ground there, certain statistics on the movement of people, public transportation, et cetera, et cetera, had that led them to believe that spread to other countries, spread rates to other countries and things, led them to ascertain that the actual numbers were probably as high as 52 times greater than China has been reporting. You have to understand that every major city in China has been in lockdown. A half a billion people in lockdown, not going out of their houses, period, except occasionally to go get some things. A government does not do that unless there's a draconian level of suppression required. So as Chris began to dig into this and others, what became aware is that the R-naught, which is the number of people that each individual who's infected is likely to reinfect, was very, very high, 4.7 to 6.6. It was originally reported as around 2, which is what SARS was. So that means that if you get infected, you're likely to infect two other people, which will cause growth, of course. If I infect two and those two infect two, it goes to 4. And you can see there's a doubling that goes on there, if that's allowed to go. So one of the ways that epidemics are monitored is what the R-naught is, how it's progressing. And the whole idea is to get the R-naught down below 1. That means if I'm infected, I infect less than one other person. And that means the total number of infected people will decline over time, of course. Well, with an R-naught of 4.7 to 6.6, you're talking about virtually an explosive situation. There's very few viruses that go beyond that. Now, measles and some of those originally were, but they were not nearly as deadly and damaging as this. The other thing that became clear very early on, which coupled with this extreme contagiousness, was that the virus is asymptomatic yet communicable or and contagious for 9 to 27 days. And that's a real bugaboo. That means that the average person is walking around asymptomatic. In other words, they feel fine. Nothing is wrong in their awareness. But yet they're a walking culture of this virus, spreading it to everyone, spreading it everywhere they go. And it's not until 9 to 27 days that they start to feel bad. So it makes it very difficult to detect and suppress. If you don't know that people are infected, it's impossible to quarantine them. And so while they were taking temperatures at airports, when people were trying to come, were trying to leave China or come into other countries, it was really ineffective because the people weren't showing symptoms. Pretty much what's happened since then is that, and I really recommend you listen to some of Chris's videos, which were providing links on below again. And you might want to go back and spend some time on this if you're really interested. But this thing is on an asymptotic curve. It's geometric. The doubling time on average is about 4 to 5 days. In other words, the number of new cases on a global level is doubling every 4 to 5 days. When you start running those numbers out, you'll see what exponential functions do. And looking back, for instance, at North Korea, which just began to get symptoms of this epidemic about a month ago, the curve went along very slowly for about 20-some days, and then it began to explode. And that's what happens because 1 becomes 2, becomes 4, becomes 8, becomes 16, becomes 32, becomes 64. You can see what happens. As each time you double, with a larger number to double by, it grows exponentially. I remember when I wrote the book, Awakening at the End of Time, there was an analogy there of a lily pond, which on day 1 had 1 lily on it. It was mostly uncovered in water. And on the last day, the lily pond was completely covered with lilies, none of the surface showing. And the question was, on what day is the lily pond half full of lilies? And the answer to that question, in a 30-day month, it was on the 29th day. If on day 1 there was 1 lily pad, and on day 30 it was covered, it was on the 29th day it was half covered. So that's stunning and difficult for the linear concrete mind of us human beings to grok. But that's what we're seeing on these curves. So it catches everyone by surprise. It comes on like gangbusters once it gets a foothold. And that's what's been happening. So because of the incredible contagiousness of this, because of the fact that it's asymptomatic the way it is, you can see it's spreading like wildfire right now across the planet. And it's probably a 30 to 60 days after you see it, where it is now in the U.S., those numbers in that doubling curve are going to really take off. So best guess, possibly, is that sometime in late March, early April in the U.S., they're probably going to see a really big exponential increase in the number of cases if it continues like this. And again, nobody knows for sure what this thing is going to do. But just projecting on based upon what's known, this is what a number of the real experts are saying. The WHO, the World Health Organization, has come out and said that they expect to have this infect 5 billion people eventually, which is, you know, a huge percentage of the world's population. Now, I mentioned before that the big concern is that this thing will mutate. The Spanish flu that happened in 1916 to 18, the first time it came around, it wasn't that severe. It was the second time that it literally took out nearly a tenth of the world's population. So there's really concern, especially because of the HIV inserts, that could happen here, and it's being monitored. And there seems to be some indication that that's a possibility. There's a big question now that may be happening in Iran. And the reason for that is that it's beginning to affect younger people. To date, in China, in Asia, it's been limited primarily to older people. About the fatality rate has been about 8% in aging boomers, you know, in the 60s and above, but practically nothing in children, and very little, like 0.5% in people up to their 30s. So it's really been affecting older people and males in particular. But they think that might be changing in Iran. So that's something bears to be monitoring. Again, if you keep your ear to the ground and especially listen to Chris, he's all over top of this. He did reveal yesterday the Center for Disease Control model that prescribes exactly what needs to be done. This is a level 5, which is the highest level of threat, according to their model. And if it develops that way, it calls for lockdowns. And that's the only way that this thing can be contained. It's what China's had to do. It's what South Korea is doing. It's what Thailand has done in part of its country. It's what Italy is doing in the north. Because of its high degree of contagiousness, it's R naught at 4.7 to 6.6, and the length of asymptomatic contagiousness. The only way you can stop it is to stop people relating to each other. So it means people need to be quarantined and isolated. And that means people are stuck in their homes for protracted periods of time. In China, it's been over months. So in the first part that we've already discussed with you, it means that we may need to be prepared for a protracted period of time. Certain Karen and I are. Everybody on this farm with four other families I live in is. We've all decided to take this very seriously. We've come to the conclusion that we're going to use this stuff eventually, and it's better to be safe than to be unprepared and to become part of the problem of trying to get supplies to people who are undersupplied and become a burden to the system. We didn't want to become a burden to the system. We tried to take what we thought was relevant, sustainable, and not hoarding or anything of the sort, but what was moderate, but what was needed to sustain us. That's kind of been our way of approaching this. Not fear-based behavior, just grounded, going to our soul and asking for what we should do, and listening deeply, and trusting, and not reacting. I guess I'll close this by saying the most important thing in this is that this is the time all of our spiritual work comes to the forefront. It's where the quote, the spiritual rubber hits the road, as the old Goodyear commercial used to say. It's where we've got to really find out what's true for us. We've got to tune out, take everything in, sit quietly, breathe through all of our fear, all of our worries, all our doubts, and come to that centered place and ask to be shown. And know that your soul and the divine will show you what you need to do. But only if you take the time to get grounded, centered, and clear, and ask, and wait till you're told. And you will be told. We've been instructed just beautifully, step by step, of what we've needed to be done flawlessly. And so far, the guidance has been impeccable, which it will be for you too if you do the same. That's what we would guide you to do, to listen. Just today, I just read that John Hopkins, one of the best in medical facilities in the country, says they feel that containment in the U.S. probably is not going to work out. It's probably going to fail. It's probably going to spread through the major populace. So it looks like that's the vector we're heading in. And so maybe it's to tune in and see, is that a likely possibility? And what happens if it does happen? And what must I do to prepare for that? And what happens if I'm not ready for that? Considerations. So I guess that's all about this for now. We're going to go more deeply into the bigger picture of this, and probably the most important picture is that this is part of awakening at the end of time. This is an evolutionary driver. This is helping us to wake up. It's serving the collective awakening. It will cause things to surface, to be brought to our attention as a species, to make us question the path we've been on, individually and collectively. It will help us to reorient our values, what's important. I think much will be learned out of this, individually, and again, collectively. Not to panic, not to be in fear, to be centered, to realize this is the next step in this big journey, and that God most certainly will guide you and lead you if you surrender in faith and trust to the wisdom, the impeccable wisdom of the divine in you. So much love and many blessings in this journey.